Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gorton Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gorton. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegorton.org. Again, that's georgegorton.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on food apocalypse, GMOs, when we come back. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens, and they helped to provide their own food and fiber for themselves and for our country. Now, today, over half of the food that we eat is imported from outside of our borders. Our food is produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce, and it is nutritionally deficient. Adolf Steinbrom of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds and compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states. Steinbrom's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being in the first place. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies, and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order for your order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegorton.org. That's georgegorton.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegorton.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Food Apocalypse GMOs, in a small book written by Greg Ciola. It's an update on the GMO problem that all of us face. Whether you know about it or not, GMOs affect you. Whether you're eating GMOs or not is going to affect you in the future. And if you're eating GMOs, it's going to have a negative effect upon you and your health in the future. If you're eating genetically modified organisms, you need health insurance. If you're one of those 44 million without health insurance and you're eating genetically modified organisms, you should do everything in your power now to get health insurance because you're going to need it. There are two statements in the Bible that zero in on this GMO problem. The first is in Matthew chapter 24, just a short, plain statement in verse 22 that says that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. The bad news is that there is a time of great dying, bad health, and great calamity coming upon the earth. It's the bad news. Good news is God himself is going to intervene and cut it short. Now, as it relates to food, there's a story back here in Deuteronomy chapter 28. It's a prophetic story. It hasn't occurred yet. I just as soon live my life, die of old age, be resurrected in the first or second resurrection, if it's at all possible. I could miss this. But it's going to happen in somebody's lifetime, and it has to do with cannibalism. Now, if you read the literature on cannibalism, it's a pretty rare event, even down in New Guinea, where people eat people. And they do it kind of, you know, from the perspective of we've always done it in the past, and it tastes real good. It's kind of like having ham, you know, on Sunday afternoon after church. You know, we've always done it that way. But the cannibalism that you read about are rare events of extreme desperation, such as an airplane crashes in the Andes and 25 people survive the crash and, you know, 30 people don't. And so they're up there for 2 months, and during the 2 months they begin to eat off of the dead carcasses of the passengers on the plane, clearly an act of desperation. There's a story about the Donner Party being trapped in California there in the 1847, I believe it was. And in a case of rare and extreme desperation and privation, some of the members of the group ate off of the bodies of the other members of the group who had already died. They weren't killing these people and eating them, you know, like the natives do down in New Guinea, but rather they were reduced to eating the dead cadavers after the fact. At Stalingrad during World War II, it was called the Thousand Day Siege, extreme privation. People were boiling shoes, you know, leather shoes, to get the broth off of them. They were eating leaves and bark off of trees. And there were 237 reported cases in the 1,000-day siege of cannibalism. Only 237 out of millions of people involved in the entire event, only 237 reported cases. So you can see here that it's very rare. But in Deuteronomy chapter 28, there's a period of time coming that I have never read in any other form of literature. I've never heard a report like this. I've never read any other report that would make a description of cannibalism this vivid and this grotesque. Listen to this. In verse 53, it starts out. This is Deuteronomy 28, verse 53. It says, "And you shall eat the fruit of your own body, the flesh of your sons and of your daughters, which the Eternal your God has given you in the siege and in the straitness wherewith your enemies shall distress you. So that the man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eye shall be evil toward his brother and toward the wife of his bosom and toward the remnant of his children which he shall leave, so that he will not give to any of them of the flesh of his children whom he shall eat, because he has nothing left him in the siege and in the straitness wherewith your enemies shall distress you in all of your gates. The tender and the delicate woman among you, which would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness, her eye shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, and toward her son, and toward her daughter, and toward her young one that comes out from between her feet, and toward the children which she shall bear, for she shall eat them for want of all things secretly in the siege and straitness wherewith your enemy shall distress you in your gates. If you will not observe to do all of the words of this law that are written in this book, that you may fear the glorious and fearful name, the Eternal your God." Now, that's a story that defies description. Again, I can't bring that to pass, and I can't prevent it. I'm just a reporter. I just report facts. You can decide for yourself the veracity of the report. It comes from a pretty reliable source. It comes from the Hebrew Scriptures. Now, with that in mind, a book recently written by Greg Sciola called Food Apocalypse, GMOs, genetically modified organisms. They're playing God and they're shoving it down your throat. And he writes in one chapter a biblical response to genetic engineering. And I thought I'd make a report on it and update the GMO story. So what is a genetically modified organism anyway? Well, all living things have been wondrously and marvelously made by our Creator, and they are unique and they are distinct unto their kind. Now, the Scripture says numerous times in Genesis chapter 1 that everything is made after its kind. And consequently, all living organisms, including plants, animals, man, bacteria, viruses, and so on, have unique genetic codes written into their DNA. These genetic codes are the blueprints that make each species distinct. Each gene is designed to carry out a specific trait or function within that particular species or organism. DNA is the primary genetic material that contains and transmits this biological information from generation to generation. Through novel advances in biotechnology, geneticists are now able to artificially modify the DNA code within a species or organism by transferring specific gene traits from one organism to another. Hence the term genetically modified organisms, called GMOs. Now, over the past 15 years, geneticists have made major breakthroughs in DNA biotechnology. And through programs initiated by the Department of Energy and the National Institutes of Health, such as the Human Genome Project, the Microbial Genome Program, and the most recent Geonomics GTL program, they've now made quantum leaps forward in the understanding of dynamic living systems. Through super advanced high-tech projects and programs, scientists have now been able to identify virtually every gene in DNA across the species barrier and then determine the sequence of the chemical base pairs that make up the DNA code. In addition, they've also been able to store this information in databases so that these technologies can be used by the private sector for research, experimentation, or to develop new patented organisms. This amazing technology has led mankind into the role of playing God, and it will eventually lead to the remodification of all life on planet Earth unless it's stopped. Genetic engineering is already taking place in a variety of fields, from food to medicine. However, my intention with this book is to focus primarily on how it's being used with agricultural commodities. Top geneticists working for the biotech industry are able to take specific gene traits from one particular organism, be it man, animal, plant, or bacteria, and then through gene transfer methods insert these gene traits into the DNA of another organism in an attempt to produce what they believe is a far superior product. Agriculture crops that contain GMOs are often referred to as transgenic crops because the genetic code of a foreign organism has been transferred into them. It is through this genetic modification that modern science is now producing novel food crops that have never existed before in Earth's history. And there is a steadily growing number of anti-biotech activists around the world who are quite concerned by this radical science as well as the safety of these new man-made foods. The biotech industry assures us, however, that we have nothing to worry about. According to their reasoning and the public statements made by some of their key representatives, they're only taking the memory of code of genes and then transferring them. Therefore, they believe everything is perfectly safe. However, no one really knows with absolute certainty what the future holds if this technology ends up overrunning our entire food supply. And no long-term safety studies have ever been done to show that they're safe for people. There's also great speculation as to the source of the genes being inserted into these organisms and the processes, and what processes they undergo before being spliced together. Some of these investigators claim that the DNA genes from humans and animals are being put into food crops. Now, although the biotech industry denies that human genes are currently being used, they have no qualms as to the source of the genes, and many of these novel new commodities have patent protection that allows the biotech companies to conceal their sources. Jeremy Rifkin, who wrote the book The Biotech Century, made a statement that is apropos to this debate. He said, imagine the wholesale transfer of genes between totally unrelated species and across all biological boundaries, plant, animal, and human, creating thousands of novel life forms in a brief moment of evolutionary time. Then, with clonal propagation, mass producing countless replicas of these new creations, releasing them into the biosphere to propagate, mutate, proliferate, and migrate, colonize the land, water, and the air. And this is, in fact, the great scientific and commercial experiment underway as we turn the corner in the biotech century. Unquote. Now, geneticists are quick to point out that no actual material from the host organism is actually transferred, just the genetic information. In their assessment, splicing genes between organisms is analogous to copying a VHS or a DVD onto a blank, or copying a paragraph of a story on your computer and then pasting it onto another document. Despite their attempts to conceal the source of the genes, the biotech industry has openly bragged about some of the gene transfers that they have made while conducting experiments in their laboratories. There are reports of pig genes being inserted into spinach, chicken genes being inserted into potatoes, fish genes into tomatoes, and rat genes into lettuce, just to name a few. Weird science, indeed. Now, many of the genes being used in genetically engineered foods are coming from sources entirely foreign to food. It's a whole new world of species now extinct thanks to genetic engineering. Sadly, it's getting worse day by day, and here are several more examples of how far this corrupt gene splicing technology has gone and is going. In the United Kingdom Times, reported in a December 18, 2000 story that Scottish scientists have pioneered the world's first intelligent super potato. It contains a gene from a jellyfish that glows green when it needs watering. According to the story, the potato plant's foliage emits a green glow when viewed through a special handheld device if it's in need of water. Scientists are now searching for sites to begin field tests on the genetically modified vegetable before it can go into commercial production. The second story comes from the Union of Concerned Scientists, reported in a May 3, 2000 story that a company has already applied to the FDA for permission to sell Atlantic salmon engineered to grow up to 6 times faster than normal. The third report, according to a Reuters news report, the creators of the cloned sheep Dolly are working with Verigen Incorporated, a company out of Plantation, Florida, to genetically modify eggs to contain cancer-fighting proteins. In Canada, scientists genetically altered goats with genes from a spider. Christian Broadcasting Network's science and medical reporter Galen Toroth stated, quote, a Canadian company recently stunned the world with news of putting spider DNA into goats. Their goal is to have goat milk contain super strong spider webs. But this milk is not for drinking. The military hopes to use large quantities of this biosteel extracted from altered goat's milk to develop new lightweight protective gear for troops. And the USDA Agriculture Research Service reported in a January 10, 2001 story that scientists have developed the first transgenic cow clone for mastitis disease resistance. U.S. Department of Agriculture and the University of Vermont researchers have produced a clone of a purebred Jersey cow whose cells may offer a biotechnological defense against mastitis disease. Though not the first cow clone, Annie is the first to be genetically altered with a gene for an agricultural application. Annie's start began with a type of somatic cell called a fibroblast. Using a mild electrical current, scientists inserted into that fibroblast's nucleus genes for lysostaphan, a green fluorescent protein called GFP. It's a tag, and it's an antibiotic marker. And also inserted was a sheep gene for beta-lactoglobulin, a switch that instructs mammary cells to make lysostaphan, unquote. And while we're on the subject of mastitis, I discovered that mastitis is caused by an alkaline acid imbalance in cows. And if I have a cow that comes down with mastitis, which is very rare because I try to keep their bodies balanced, but if I do, I give them vinegar. Just raw apple cider vinegar will clear up mastitis in 24 hours. seems like a lot of work to go to. But then, you know, think about it pragmatically. If a guy comes along and says, oh, your cow's got mastitis, she's got an alkaline imbalance, give her vinegar. There's no money to be made in something like that. But if you've got mastitis as a routine problem in dairy herds, and you're selling lots of penicillin, or you're selling a lot of GMO, high technology, expensive solutions, well, it makes all the sense in the world. So if you're looking for an expensive solution to mastitis, I'm sure that this is the way to go. If you're like me, you're a cheapskate. Why? And always remember, alkaline acid imbalance in cows causes mastitis, cured by apple cider vinegar. Now, Israeli scientist engineers featherless chicken. Now, according to a May 21st, 2002 story that appeared on the website, Israeli geneticist Avi Kahaner of the Rehovot Institute near Tel Aviv has created the world's first fatherless, featherless or naked chicken. Have you ever thought about a naked chicken? I mean, think of the advantages. You don't have to pluck them, you know, when you're killing them. They're called featherless chickens. Despite its bizarre appearance, the red-skinned broiler could become a supermarket success because it's designed to grow faster and contain less fat than normal chickens. It'll also be cheaper to produce since its lack of feathers means that there's no need to pluck it before it hits the shelves. There's no doubt that weird science is now taking place all over the world, and it's going to get worse in the future, and where it stops, no one really knows. Now, John Hagelin, a presidential candidate who ran in the 2000 election, I'm sure you're all familiar with John Hagelin, ran for president of the United States in 2000. Well, here's the statement that he made concerning biotechnology. He said, now, quote, when genetic engineers disregard the reproductive boundaries set in place by natural law, they run the risk of destroying our genetic encyclopedia, compromising the richness of our natural biodiversity, and creating genetic soup. What this means for the future of our ecosystem, no one really knows. So how does this DNA get transferred? Has anybody ever thought about that? There's a science behind it. And why were these genetically modified crops created? And what crops are currently grown with these GMOs? So let's take a look here at why were these genetically modified crops created in the first place? I mean, if you stop and think about it, you know, we've lived for thousands of years without them. And all of a sudden we're being told that we've got to have genetically modified technology or something very bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil is going to happen to all of us. Well, the biotech industry has given many benevolent explanations to support their alteration of the world's food supply. Now, listed below are 8 of the more popular reasons for engaging in this highly controversial technology. Now, while these explanations may on the surface sound very plausible, in this book I'm going to show you the flaws in the industry's reasoning and why I believe that they're dead wrong. First of all, they tell us that these plants are pest resistant. All agricultural commodities are subject to pest problems, and since the Industrial Revolution, the most common method that farmers used to deal with this problem was to spray their crops with powerful chemical insecticides and pesticides. Using genetic engineering, scientists are now able to take the gene characteristics of a specific soil bacterium that is known to be a natural pesticide and then transfer the genetic information of this bacterium directly into the crop itself, so that every cell of the plant will now exude this pesticide. Now, the problem is that this hasn't eliminated pesticide use, and no one knows whether or not the long-term consumption of these new biotech foods will lead to subsequent health problems. Okay, I'm going to pause here and make my little editorial comment. I would suggest to you that the BT that is now being exuded by every cell in the plant is a toxic poison that kills insects. Now, it may be a natural toxin. At least you'll know when you die from this poisoning that it was all natural. Number 2, herbicide tolerant. Other serious problems that farmers face is called weed control. Well, until recently, they had to either physically remove the weeds by hand, which is very expensive, or they have to spray herbicides on the crops and then the soil in order to kill the weeds. Well, in the past, if a farmer sprayed too much herbicide, it could damage or destroy his own crop. Through biotechnology, scientists can now splice foreign genes into the crops to make them immune to herbicides. This then allows farmers to still use the same herbicides, but in larger amounts. So while the crops remain immune to their deadly effects, U.S. farmers were told that genetically modified crops would cut down on the use of these pesticides and herbicides dramatically. But this has not been the case. And in reality, biotech companies are patenting these newly modified crops in order to contractually lock these farmers into using their specific branded pesticides and herbicides, which makes them more profit. For example, if you plant Roundup Ready soybeans in your field, you have to sign a technology use agreement with the seed dealer that stipulates that you'll only use Roundup herbicide to treat that crop. And if you get caught treating it with any other herbicide, then you have to pay a fine, a fee. Third, they tell us that these plants are drought resistant. Well, all farmers around the world have been afflicted by droughts and bad growing seasons. Biotechnology promises new crops that can grow in less time and on less suitable soil. And on the surface, this would seem like a noble cause. However, much more research is needed to assure the world that these crops are safe, and the biotech industry has not done so. Now, number four, extended shelf life. You know, all crops eventually rot or spoil. This maturation process is regulated by a specific gene or set of genes in all food organisms. Through biotechnology, geneticists can manipulate these genes so that the shelf life of food is extended far beyond its normal state. Can you imagine a tomato that stays ripe red or a banana that stays yellow and fresh for 6 months on the shelf with no refrigeration? Well, this is where this science will go if it isn't stopped, because this is exactly what they want to do. Extending the shelf life of various crops may sound like a terrifically good idea on the surface, but it completely defies the cycle of life set up by our Creator. Now, it could also be particularly damaging to farmers in North America and Europe. To the surprise of many, most food production is under the control of a handful of corporations. Since higher profits is their motivating factor, their ultimate goal is to wipe out all small farmers, all of the small family farmers, and transfer farming to third world countries where they can use slave labor to grow the world's food. Extending a crop's shelf life far beyond its natural state would allow for the shipment of these genetically altered foods all over the world. And then five, higher nutritional yield. These geneticists are working on ways to enhance the vitamin nutritional content of various crops. It's now possible to make food into a powerful vitamin or multivitamin. Rice is one of the first crops that they focused on because it's a predominant food in the third world, and many people in these areas are severely malnourished. So the first approved version of this technology was a modified version of rice called golden rice that contained higher amounts of vitamin A. The next wave of biotech crops will produce a host of different products, including oils with increased levels of vitamin E and reduced levels of saturated fat. Many more food products are planned for introduction in the not-too-distant future. It's hard not to see the ulterior motive behind the promotion of this aspect of biotechnology. Now, the real movers and shakers behind increasing nutritional yields in food crops are the pharmaceutical giants like Pfizer and Merck. Their real goal is to wipe out the nutritional supplement industry and then use genetically engineered foods with higher nutritional yields as a substitute. However, these techno-foods will come at a much higher cost in countries such as America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Europe compared to the cost of nutritional supplements. And then number six, they have a great tolerance to cold. And many crops are negatively impacted each year by frost and freeze damage. Through biotechnology, they can take anti-freezing genes from fish that survive in cold Atlantic waters and other species that are well equipped to survive in cold water or cold weather and insert these genes into crops. Tomatoes and strawberries are two examples where this has already been done. These genetic alterations now enable the crop to withstand freezing temperatures without harm. It sounds like a great concept, doesn't it? Unfortunately, there's no end to the genetic freak show that we're going to witness. And then they tell us they're disease resistant. Many viruses, bacteria, and fungi are responsible for numerous plant diseases. Through biotechnology, geneticists are working on ways to create crops that are immune or resistant to various diseases that plague farmers. The problem with this aspect of biotechnology is that new and more harmful plant diseases could emerge, and it is possible that by making a plant immune to one disease, mutations could occur, resulting in whole new diseases that we've never heard of before. It's a dangerous shot in the dark. And number eight, pharmaceutical applications. Scientists are currently working on ways to transfer the genetic traits of humans, pharmaceutical drugs, and vaccines into crops, so medicines can be eaten instead of taken orally or by injection. This particular sector of genetic engineering is being referred to as the holy grail of the biotech industry because it has the potential to profit them the most. The first application of this technology was with a banana designed to protect against hepatitis B. Other similar tests with hepatitis B have been conducted using potatoes, tobacco, and carrots. For example, Giessen University researchers have acknowledged that they have successfully modified carrots to contain the vaccine against hepatitis B. Dr. Imeni from Giessen says that they can now make about 100,000 plants within 2 weeks that would be ready to eat in 3 months. A number of other transgenic plant vaccines are currently being developed. For example, the cholera toxin gene was introduced into the chloroplast genome of tobacco to produce high levels of vaccine antigen. Edible cholera B vaccines were produced in transgenic tomatoes. Transgenic tobacco was modified to produce vaccines against hepatitis B. And although none of these products are on the market yet, thank God, tests are being conducted throughout the world to determine how to use this technology on a massive scale and how to market it. A June 1st, 2004 AP story says that the number of federal regulatory approvals and applications of these outdoor plantings, often called biofarming, have nearly doubled in the past 12 months compared to the previous year, according to a study to be released by the Washington, D.C.-based Center for Science in the Public Interest. All right, now that's what they tell us that it's going to do for us, but will it really do all of that for us, and at what cost? Well, I got to give you a reminder here, if I can find my papers. Maybe I won't give you a reminder. You can get a copy of this book, let me fill that in first, by writing down Food Apocalypse. That's spelled F-O-O-D, Apocalypse, A-P-O-C-A-L-Y-P-S-E, GMOs, Genetically Modified Organisms. It's written by Greg Ciola, G-R-E-G-C-I-O-L-A, about 125 pages, let me look, about 125 pages. And if you need a copy, you can go to bravenewbookstore.com. bravenewbookstore.com, or if you want, you can call 512-480-2503. Again, that's 512. It's in Austin, Texas. I found us a bookstore that handles this kind of underground press. That's called Brave New Bookstore, Austin, Texas. The number is 512-480-2503. All right, here's my paper. I got to give you a reminder here for the FCC around the world that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. And it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, if you'd like a copy of this book, I highly recommend it. I think that it's a dynamite little book. It'll give you a very succinct story and give you the information that you need on GMOs and where the technology is today and what you can do to avoid genetically modified organisms in your grocery store. The name of the book, again, is A Food Apocalypse, GMOs, Genetically Modified Organisms. They're playing God and shoving it down your throats. It's a biblical response to genetic engineering by Greg Ciola. That's G-R-E-G-C-I-O-L-A. And you can get a copy. It's $8.95 is the price of the book. Imagine if you're out of town and you get a call and have it shipped to you. Probably be a couple bucks more. But if you'll go to the bravenewbookstore.com, it's an easy one, bravenewbookstore.com. They've got them in stock. And if you live in Austin, Texas, or the environs thereof, you can call them at 512-480-2503. That's area code 512-480-2503. All right, Laura Ticcati, T-I-C-C-I-A-T-I, Ticcati, or Ticcatia, or something on that order, with an activist organization called Mothers for Natural Law, had this to say about genetically engineered food. She said, "Our government believes that genetically engineered foods are the solution to world hunger and the greatest scientific advancement of our time. However, throughout the rest of the world, many countries are refusing our exports, demanding mandatory labeling, or attempting to ban this technology from their borders entirely. Until now, very few Americans have known anything about genetically engineered foods, and when they do, they are appalled and opposed to them." Dr. Mei Wan Ho with the Institute of Science in Society published a great article against biotechnology titled Beyond Bad Science and Big Business. Here's an excerpt from the story that is an excellent retort to the beneficial claims that the biotech industry gives for this science. A full copy of the story can be accessed online at the following address. Now he says, the biotech industry and their supporters claim that we need GM crops to feed a growing world population. But UN studies show that world population growth has been slowing down since the 1960s. The prediction in 1998 was that total world population will peak at 7.7 billion in 2040 and go into a long-term decline to about 3.6 billion by 2150. Less than two-thirds of today's number, and the FAO report on agriculture released earlier this year similarly concludes that existing technologies, not counting GM, will produce enough and more than enough food to meet population growth for the foreseeable future. The real problem is distribution, as generally acknowledged. People are starving in the midst of plenty. And finally, there's plenty of evidence that low-input ecological farming methods using crops and knowledge adapted to local conditions have been increasing yields 2, 3, or 4-fold or more in Latin America, Africa, and Asia since the 1980s, providing social, environmental, and health benefits to everyone. There are compelling reasons for farmers to grow and sell local crops locally adapted to local conditions rather than national or international varieties for export. Export industrial agriculture is responsible for a great proportion of the fossil fuel consumption that contributes to climate change. And there's also incalculable health bonuses to be gained by all in phasing out agrochemicals already linked to cancers and many other diseases. In short, now is the time for all of us to join forces to turn the tide on bad science and big multinational business to reclaim the good life in every sense for everyone. So what crops are currently being grown as genetically modified organisms? The upsetting news is that a large portion of the packaged food being produced for human consumption today contains genetically modified organisms. Unfortunately, since so many genetically modified foods have already made their way to market, it is now virtually impossible to avoid eating them. Some of these plants that have been genetically manipulated and approved for human consumption are corn, soybeans, canola, rapeseed, cotton, rice, potatoes, squash, papaya, tomatoes, peppers, various garden vegetables, and some fruits. Other genetically altered crops, such as wheat and barley, are not on the market yet because they still lack the necessary governmental approval, since there are presently no labeling laws requiring manufacturers to state whether or not their product contains GMOs. It's very difficult for consumers to determine exactly which foods contain these novel new organisms. The United States currently grows approximately 75% of the foods that have been genetically modified worldwide. In 1999, nearly 35% of all crops grown on American soil were genetically engineered, and since that time, the numbers have increased significantly. World use of genetically modified crops was up 11% in 2000, according to a Dow Jones Newswire story. The annual global review of commercialized transgenic crops, conducted by the International Service for the Acquisition of Agrobiotech Applications, reported that in 2001, 130 million acres of transgenic crops were grown in 13 countries. Now, this represented a 19% increase from the year before and an increase of more than 30-fold from 1996. In 2004, we're seeing the barriers for GM crops being lifted around the world, especially in Europe, India, and South America. The four most predominant biotech crops grown here in the United States are corn, soybeans, cotton, and canola. The estimated percentage grown in the year 2004 are as follows. Of corn, about 35 to 50% of the corn was GMO. 60 to 80% of the cotton was GMO. 80 to 90% of the soybeans and 30 to 50% of the canola. So I find it rather intriguing that these four crops happen to be the primary ones zeroed in on by the biotech industry. Perhaps it's due to the fact that a majority of the food products that we consume every day contain one or more of these ingredients. It appears to me that a biotech company, in conjunction with the international food conglomerates, wanted to make sure, right out of the bag, right out of the gate, that this technology would impact a large percentage of our food in order to ensure success. In essence, they have shoved this food down our throats while a vast majority of us have been asleep at the wheel. So let's take corn, for example. It may come as a surprise to you that there are literally thousands upon thousands of products on the market today that use corn and corn byproducts in their formulations. These can include corn syrup, corn starch, corn flour, corn meal, corn oil, or maltodextrin from corn. Just check out the labels, and I think you're going to be shocked. Now, how many people, for instance, drink soda pop on a daily basis? Well, are you aware that almost all soda pop, other than diet soda, is loaded with high fructose corn syrup? So many of the fruit drinks and packaged beverages also contain high amounts of fruit corn syrup. The fact of the matter is that you're now most likely consuming engineered genes if you're using any product containing corn or corn byproducts. Now, has anyone warned you or given you a choice? I'm going to pause right here and make an observation. He's got a chapter here a little later on that advises you on how to avoid these GMO products. So before we go any further, let me suggest to you that, you know, many of us that are concerned about these GMOs have the same problem that you and everybody else has. So how do we avoid them? Now, I avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD. You know, I do everything I can to avoid them. If I eat any of it, it's clearly by accident. Now, while it's true that the labels on most GMOs are not on the labels in the supermarkets, buying at the supermarket isn't exactly the best place to buy anyway. So if you go to the health food store, and there are some big chains now like Whole Foods and Wild Oats for you people living in the major cities, you know, you can avoid these GMOs because the people who are into organics try to avoid those GMOs. Now, it is true, you may go to a restaurant, and let's say you're a Jew and you don't eat pork and you don't know what these guys are doing back in the kitchen. And so most of us, you know, when we go into the restaurant, you know, we say, do you have any bacon or pork in the string beans? Do you use MSG? You know, when I go into a Chinese restaurant, they used to be big on MSG. You know, there's some Chinese restaurants now that don't put MSG in their food. I'm not saying they all do, I'm just saying that there are some. So I go to those restaurants, and I've got a boy here that's highly allergic to MSG. I mean, if it's got MSG, he'll have a seizure. So what we do is we take our boy into the Chinese restaurant, then we say, hey, do you have any MSG? And they say, no, we don't. He has a seizure after he comes out of there. We know they're lying to us. We don't go back. But in most cases, you know, if they're using MSG, they'll tell you, because when you walk in, what you do is you say, now, if there's any MSG, I'm highly allergic to it, and I'll have a seizure right here in your restaurant, and you'll have to call an ambulance and haul me out of here. And it's not going to look good to the rest of your patients, you know, if I'm eating here in your restaurant, and I have to be hauled out of here in an ambulance. And, you know, those people don't lie. Oh, yes, yes, we have MSG right over here. Don't eat this, don't eat this, and don't eat this. And they get right after it. Now, if you're in the supermarket, you know, and you want to buy something, and you're concerned about it having MSG in it, if it says organic on the label, then you can just about be sure that there won't be any MSGs in it, GMOs, if it says organic. So always look for products that say organic on them. And there's a lot of products in supermarkets that now have organic because there's some pretty big outfits, you know, that are selling it. So there's a couple of little tips there for you. Now, you know, we go into Walmart every once in a while, and we're label readers. And, you know, I buy motor oil there and a couple other things. And now what they're selling for you to eat, you know, probably ought to be avoided. For instance, they mentioned papayas. See, I don't eat papayas anymore. I eat mangoes. I eat bananas. I eat other fruits, but I avoid those papayas. And that's because they went over to Hawaii and they started this papaya GMO thing. Now, if you're a regular listener, remember I told you the Frontier Airlines story? I love it. Gotta love it. What you do is you write a letter to Kraft Foods and you say, I would eat Kraft Foods, but your foods contain genetically modified organisms. Now, are you planning to discontinue these GMOs? That's question one. And then question two, if you do, can you tell me approximately when so I can go back to eating Kraft Foods? I've always enjoyed your products in the past until I discovered that they're no longer compatible for human food. And, you know, if you think of a couple of more questions, you might put them on there. And then you send it off to Kraft Foods. Send them an email. And if the answer is no and we don't plan to make any changes, they don't even respond to you, because they don't want you to have any ammunition that you might use against them. If the answer is yes, and there are a number of companies that have announced that they're going to discontinue these GMOs because of a public backlash. Now, they're going to sell out what they've got already. I mean, you know, they can see that their products aren't being well accepted. You know, business is very, very attuned to, very, very concerned about profitability and customer satisfaction. I try to avoid joining these groups and organizations where people are just anonymous, you know, just anonymous voices. I like to get right in there myself. And a personal letter is worth 10 times more than the National Institute of Health sending an official letter from an institution. And the reason for that is this. Only 2% of people actually write a letter. Only 2% of people actually respond to an advertisement on the radio or television. And these companies are very well attuned to the fact that when they receive a letter from you, it represents 50 more people out there that didn't write a letter but think the same way you do. So if Kraft Foods or General Mills or any of these companies that are producing these GMO products receive one letter from you, they immediately extrapolate that into 50 consumers out there that are not buying their product because it contains genetically modified organisms. See how simple that is? I mean, that's pretty powerful. So I come on the air and I give you that little piece of information, and I say that there's a number of these companies that you might want to be writing a letter to. I mean, if you want some changes made, here's some examples. In the book on page 122, remember, this is the book now, it's called Food Apocalypse, GMOs, Genetically Modified Organisms. And he's got some ideas in here about, you know, join this or that club, group, or organization. But General Mills, Nestle, Heinz Food, Nabisco, Procter & Gamble, Frito-Lay, Campbell, Dole, Planters, PepsiCo, Land of Lakes, Philip Morris, Pillsbury, Kraft, Kellogg's, Healthy Choice, Quaker Oats, Hershey's, Dannon, Hunt's, Del Monte, Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Mars, Dyson, and Sara Lee. This isn't all of them. This is just some of the big ones over here. They got their telephone numbers in there. I found that writing is more valuable, because when you write a letter, write an email, they have the document in their hands, and they'll extrapolate that into 50 more. And you write letters to General Mills, Nestle, and Heinz Food, and you say, you use genetically modified organisms. I don't. I don't buy General Mills or Nestle or Heinz Foods because of these genetically modified organisms, although in the past I have, and I always liked General Mills, Nestle, and Heinz Food. Can you tell me, are you going to discontinue this practice? And if so, can you tell me when? And if not, then I will not buy General Mills products, and I am a label reader. Please respond. And all of a sudden, you know, they get 1,000 of those letters. That says 50,000 people, just like you, aren't buying their products. That's a chunk, boys and girls, just 1,000. People like you and me writing a letter to General Mills sends a signal to them that 50,000 people aren't buying their products. They don't like that. And many companies have made the change already. And if you'd like to see General Mills, Nestle, and Heinz Food make the change, write a letter. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to cut it off right here and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.